Back in April, we brought on a walk-on Army member, James Brandstetter. He was an incredible episode. Today, we do it again. Number two, part two of the walk-on Army feature from Patreon. Micah joins us, an incredible guy, incredible Hawkeye fan. He brought some fire questions to this podcast and a great conversation. We're back. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 243 of the podcast, and today we're here with one of our very own. This is a whole family episode because we got one of the Wash Up Walk-On Army members in the house today, and it was very Kevin-esque to show up late and show our guest exactly how we do things around here in a total slapdick manner. Hopefully we have a great time on here, though. Look forward to it. Micah, welcome to the podcast. And I hope you have an enjoyable time and put on for the walk-on Army.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Micah, have you ever won? You go and you enter into a contest at the mall, and it's like, win this car, and you drop your info on a little piece of paper, and then you never win, right? Because no one wins those things. Well, right, you won this. Have you won anything? Have you won anything as good as this in your life?
No. I've won like one thing in my life, and that was like a gift card to East Bay when I was.
Dude, to be honest, a East Bay gift card has monetary value and that better than this.
Could be better than this. Drake, have you ever won something like that? I've never won a damn thing.
Dude, listen to this. At our after prom carnival, I won an iPad.
What?
Yeah.
Guy scored. My goodness. Can't even afford his own laptop now, but had an iPad in high school. You know, it is what it is. Kevin, you're joining. I think you tried to say something at the beginning. I don't know if your mic is working or not. Are you in? Oh, Kevin's not in. We can't hear him, so he's gonna have to figure that one out real quick. So this episode is starting hot. Micah, this is how shit rolls around here, as you're totally good.
Your fancy microphone, we're tossing it out. It's fucking bullshit.
We're not. No. Don't toss out the microphone because as we've been talking about, the walk-ons have been on a little upgrade recently. So we found a few dollar bills lying in the envelope, and we were able to buy the boys some matching microphones to what you're hearing me on. When Kevin finally figures that out, I might have to buy his ass a whole new laptop and Drake as well. So they're bankrupt.
Hey, dude, I don't know what it is. Every other thing I plug in my USB port works perfectly fine.
Except for microphones? Dude, I hate you. You know what? As the tech guy hates you.
Well, tech guy's not doing his job. He's not making my computer fucking run.
Well,
you think CEO comes and uploads the software on his computer? No, he's like, dude, just come make the computer work.
Are you telling me that I'm going to have to make a run to Iowa City, dude, just to...
Well, what the hell else are you doing these days?
Okay. I'm talking to Micah on the back end. We're setting up guests. Dude, I'm creating promos. People all across the state are about to hear my voice on promos on a radio station near you. What? More on that in a little bit. Also...
That makes me want to vomit.
I'm going to really try not to cough, but the fucking COVID got me, boys. Oh, I tried to herm it up. You guys know that I basically don't leave the house. I don't do anything, as Kevin just alluded to, and the COVID still found me. It's probably the Delta variant. So, and I'm fine. I'm just fine. All right. Vaccinated, still got it. I'm fine. But it got me. So if I cough, I'm going to try and hit the mute button best I can. Micah, we're going to make this about you now. Welcome to the freaking podcast. You are the second guest. Did you listen to the first episode we did with James?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you think about that?
I thought it was really good.
He set the bar.
He did.
Pretty high. Yeah. I think Drake was sort of on one in that episode too. And, you know, obviously Drake, he sort of, he's our bar setter here.
But am I though? Because supposedly I'm tanking.
Well,
you're doing a great job of doing both.
Incredible.
Demographic, you're going this way. With the other demographic, you're going that way.
Yeah, depending on who the listener is, him setting the bar and him ruining our podcast is the same. It's going at the same speed.
Yeah, whatever you do, you are either growing the podcast at an extraordinary rate or completely turning off the entire.
Yeah. Kevin, before you got in here, I read a review that someone left us recently in the past month or so.
Oh, cool.
And it said something along the lines of Kevin and Tyler offer great insights and they talk good stuff about football. You'd be better off with a wet fart in your ear than listening to Drake talk.
I think you should put that in the promos.
I do not think so. Micah, what do you have to say about that? Do you agree?
No, I actually enjoy all different sides of it. You know, I have buddies like Drake that you can't take out in public. So, you know, I love it. Good. I love it. I like to run my mouth, be a little smart at times too. So maybe not quite to the level of Drake, but no, it's all good.
Good. Good. That's good. Cause that's what this podcast is all about. You have been with us in the Walk-On Army for over a year now.
Yeah.
Over a year, May of 2020. Your ass must have been bored during the quarantine because you're like, I gotta start doing something. I'm gonna get a little extra content for the walk-ons here.
And you know, like with what I was telling you earlier about my job, I'm outside by myself on equipment or stuff. So I like to have something to listen to rather than just music all the time. So that's when I started really getting into podcasts and found you guys.
And you're from Iowa, correct?
I am. Yep.
Born and bred. Hawkeye all the way through?
All the way through. Yep. Grew up Southwest Iowa pretty much my whole life. Dad was a Hawkeye fan and had some instances throughout my life that kind of cemented Hawkeye fandom and just never waver.
You never, there was no Nebraska influence, was there?
Oh, it's all over. Like, where I grew up, it's all Omaha TV stations. So, I mean, it was just constant barrage of that. We got the Omaha paper in my hometown. They actually covered our Southwest Iowa sports better than the Des Moines Register. So for high school and stuff as a kid, but that's why. But yeah, it was constant Nebraska stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're happy we can shed a black and gold light on your day while you're going through work. I think it's interesting to hear when people listen to us. You know, whether it's working out or it's on the job, some people on the drive into work, it's like, sometimes I just don't know if that's the best use of your time, patrons, but you know, it is what it is. That's awesome. And we really appreciate you, being a part of the Walk-On Army. Hopefully we get to do more of this and meet some of the Walk-On Army members this fall. As we record this episode, we are 10 days away from Hawkeye football opening up against the Indiana Hoosiers. Micah, are you going to make it to Iowa City for any of the games this year?
Yeah, we're planning on hitting the Penn State game for sure. And then maybe another one or two, hopefully. So
what is Micah's biggest concern with the 2021 Hawkeyes right now?
I don't know. I'd probably say the biggest question marks are the offensive and defensive lines, just lack of experience from what I can see. You know, I think talent's there, but we'll just see how well it meshes together and how quick it comes together.
If also concerned with the amount of pitchforks in our offensive line's feet right now.
Only in Iowa.
Wait a minute. That's what happened to Shooter's foot?
Well, just speculating, but, you know, bailing hay, pitchfork incident, foot injury, speculating.
Okay. Well, yeah, we need less of that. We need a little less of that.
Can we just put the pitchforks down? Can we put them down?
Can we put Micah in the game? Micah, if they call on you, are you ready?
No.
No.
Were you a player back in the day at all?
I played we're class 1A here in high, you know, so small time, but yeah.
Where's that? Where's home for you?
I grew up in Massena, Iowa, which is down in the southwest corner. If you're familiar with it, like Atlantic, it's fairly close to there.
Okay. Born and raised, still down there? Where are you at now?
Yeah, yep. Born and raised. I left for about 10 years for work and came back after, right before I got married. So back home in the same little town.
A legend.
Hey, ain't nothing wrong with that, brother.
Yeah.
The as we draw closer here, this season, especially getting to go back into Kinnick, what are your expectations as a fan coming into this season? What does Micah Lee think that the Hawkeyes of 2021 are going to put out on the field?
I think they should be really good. Defense should be solid. Like I said, as long as the defensive line comes together fairly quickly, you know, I don't think 9-10 wins is out of the question at all. You know,
it could over. Go there,
but I don't know. I don't see him taking a step back this year.
Over 8.5 wins then.
Yep.
How much money would you be willing to put on that?
I don't know.
Are you a betting guy?
I am not.
You're not, you don't frequent the casino like our guy Kevin here?
I do not. No, no.
I wouldn't say frequent, you know, when I see an opportunity and I see a line I like, you know, you gotta jump, man. You gotta make moves.
So. You know, Kevin's pretty good, dude. If you were just willing to wager $10 per wager and never waver from that, you would make a few X per bet with Kevin over the stretch of a season. He's pretty good at what he
in the Big Ten.
I didn't have a great season last season, but 2019, COVID year. Nothing counts COVID year, but 2019.
Wow.
We were hot.
You're calling fluke year, huh?
Yeah, COVID year.
Doesn't count against the guy's eligibility, it legitimately didn't happen.
What did we got to do to get another year, actually? Do we have a COVID year? I got COVID. I feel like I deserve a COVID.
I also got it. If that's the only thing you got to check off the box, you have the antibodies. If you have naturally formed antibodies, not gooey juice, you get to come back with more eligibility.
In that case, we got to figure out if Josie has COVID or had it. If Ricky Stanzi had COVID, I don't know. Like if we pull a few back. I don't know how old you are, Micah. You look pretty young.
Yeah, right.
No, like
I'm 44.
Okay. In your years of Hawkeye fandom, since you've been sort of black and gold since the beginning, what memories do you look back on that really stick out to you? And I guess usually in the Iowa scene, it's pretty much based on, and probably for you, I mean, 22 years now with Coach Ferentz, you would have been I guess you would have been just out of college or just at the back end of your sort of you're becoming a young adult as we made the transition from Hayden to Coach Ferentz. What are the memories that really punch out to you?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm old. So I do remember like my earliest Hawkeye memory is, and I don't remember details, but the 85 season, you know, the Michigan Iowa game, I just remember it being a big deal. You know, I don't remember, we had a friend, a gal from my hometown married a guy that played on that 85 team. So kind of had a connection there. And so
she made it
as a little kid. So that was pretty cool. But I remember, you know, my first memories when I got into that high school age and stuff, early college, they weren't very good, you know, towards the end of Hayden's tenure. So that was kind of rough.
Not great.
But then, you know, when Kirk came in, it's been, you know, the 2002 season was awesome.
We heard a hell of a lot of the stories from Coach Ferentz about those teams that were pretty good. Those were kind of like tales that he used as threats to us, basically. He's like, you don't want to live through what this is, and you're guaranteed to have a shitty life if you suck, so don't suck.
I don't quite remember it being put that
way.
Coach
Ferentz said that it was no fun to be around a losing program. No part of playing in the program when they were losing and being the doormat was fun. That's a miserable way to go around living as a college athlete.
Okay, that's different from the first way that you said it, though.
Well, sure. I paraphrased. Can a guy not say it in his own words?
He said you're going to have a shitty life. I think there's something to that, though. I think, like, those years on the back end, and you can probably find a period of time where every program has gone through that. If you get the right transition where you get a coach who knows what he's doing, you get players who buy into that coach, and you actually are able to find some talent, basically exactly what Nebraska hasn't done, right? Yeah. Being that bad really does provide the perfect motivation to maybe not ascend to the level that those 2003-04 teams did, 2002-03-04, but at least crawls you out of the gap to find a little bit of success, because people just get sick and tired of being dog shit bad. Like, yeah, you know?
Yeah, there's that, and there's also, you know, Coach Lombardi says winning's a habit, unfortunately so is losing. Losing can just become ingrained in your culture, and, you know, you get people to just, you know, not care anymore, and that's part of it too. So it's,
is that where Nebraska's at? Is that where Nebraska's at this point?
Losing is a habit?
It's become like a 6-year slide that's now embedded in their culture.
You know, I would love to have an interview with a current or former player under Scott Frost in Nebraska and just ask him, like, hey, what the hell is going on over there? Like, what is the culture? Is there a culture? What do you guys believe in this program? Because I don't know. You don't see it on the field.
It wouldn't take much.
A lot of programs have an identity that you can see, and it translates onto the field. I have no idea what they're about in Nebraska football right now.
I think their culture is a constant state of trying to find a culture. It's like, hey, anything, we'll take it. We'll take it.
Well, and part of that is coaching turnover. It's hard. It's hard to build a culture up from, you know, complete turnover of staff. You know, you got good kids in there who you didn't recruit, you didn't build a relationship with, and now you have to bring in your guys, but they're around guys who are with a different staff, and it becomes hard. So that's why Iowa really does have an advantage of having KF there for, what's he at, 22 years now?
And they're a while.
23, I think, this year.
This will be 22.
23.
Micah, who is your favorite coach on the staff?
That's a tough question.
I know. There's a lot of legends.
There's some really good – I probably have to say Phil Parker.
Hard to go wrong there.
Defense has been – I do like Brian, though, too. I like just his attitude, the little more, you know, kind of a screw you, I'm going to do what I want to do, say what I'm going to say. I don't know. I think they got a really, really good staff. I'm anxious to see what the new offensive line coach, you know, that progresses well. But, yeah, Phil, I think Phil's pretty hard to say.
Yeah.
As a fan, have you been able to, like, appreciate Coach Ferentz's tenure as you watched other programs, like, fold with coaching change and stuff? Like, is that something that you really
appreciate? For sure. Yeah. You know, just – like right next door with Nebraska, you know, where they fire Frank Solich after winning 9 games and 2 years removed from like a conference championship or whatever.
And then they fire Bo Pelini, and all his players loved him, and he's winning like 10 games a year.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just, yeah. The few poor years, if you want to say that Iowa's had, you know, whatever, we're not, yeah, Iowa State, we're not Alabama. It's going to happen in a developmental program. It's been a lot of fun for over the last, especially the last, well, yeah, the whole time, really. You know, there's been some peaks and valleys, but definitely appreciate it. I'm not one big on change myself, so I like that stability.
Would you, as a fan, like to see someone from inside the program take over that fateful day that KF does have to retire? Or would you rather see someone outside come in?
That's a good question for a fan.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know if it necessarily has to be somebody like that's currently inside the program, but, you know, somebody that's been through it is coaching somewhere else. I think, you know, I think that's kind of important.
Someone who's been through Iowa City, whether as a player or as a coach at some point, right, knows what Iowa's about.
Exactly.
What if Polisek came back?
Dude, I would love to play for
him. That just popped in my mind. Like, hey, he made a little stop. He was at North Dakota State. Now he's at Wyoming. All those schools, they kind of got the same. They bring in the same kind of guy, same culture.
Can all you imagine him as a head coach? Like, dude brings energy.
Energy. He brings the same energy that PJ Fleck does, except for they have two totally different vibes.
Except his seems completely authentic.
Right.
Not even seems. It is. It's like you can't, you know, and up there in Minnesota, they got Jake Gervais 100% fake juice.
Ooh. Ooh. They got that onion juice.
No, I mean, yeah. Come on, like some of the shtick and spiel that he does, like I don't know how you can like buy into that. I mean, maybe I'm just not be able to relate with a 16 to 18 year old kid obsessed with TikTok these days, but I can't possibly imagine playing for PJ Fleck.
I'm the same way. I'm like, you know, I can guess maybe I can see the high school seniors and the younger kids when he's recruiting them eating it up, but as you're a, you know, a fourth, fifth year guy, it's like, come on with that, you know. It's like, I don't want to listen to that rah-rah BS all the time. Let's be real. We're adults. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it carries much weight, but I'm old.
I think I have an opinion on PJ that is probably not a common one, and it's that I actually believe that that energy that he puts out is very real. For
him. You think that's his authentic self?
I think that's legitimately him. And the reason
he's just a dweeb.
Right. So, and this is I'm gonna shit on myself here. I think that if I
dude, actually now that you're about to blow PJ Fleck, you kind of look like
him. I was just gonna say that.
Micah. Oh, come on. Hold on, let me bring up a picture of PJ because we're gonna, I mean, if we had a producer for this show, since I have to do both. What I was going to say is if I, Tyler Kluber, tried to go be a head coach at a Division I program, and you guys know me, like if I tried to get up every day and be like, all right, baby, we're going to roll the boat. Like it would be like the sort of vibe that I would put off as a head coach. Like no one would like it. I wouldn't even like it. But I truly think that PJ Fleck, that's his real vibe. I think that it's too hard to fake it that much.
I believe that, man. Maybe it's valid, but I don't know. It's just not my type of guy.
Me neither.
Micah, who are some of your favorite and least favorite coaches around the Big Ten? You got any guys that you respect or guys that you just can't stand to listen to press conferences from or see on TV?
Not a huge Frost fan.
That's fair.
Drives me nuts how he throws his guys under the bus constantly, never takes any responsibility for their anything they do on the field. It's always somebody else's fault. Yeah, you do look like him.
Pause. Yes.
Shave your beard.
Kluber, you trim the beard down a little bit. I mean,
yeah. I got to shave my head more.
Yeah.
Is that picture underneath him what he looked like with hair?
Correct. That's like when he played right out of college as he got like a coaching job.
Tough.
Kind of guy that was trying to bang all of the chicks on campus. Let's just be honest.
I don't know. Something about James Franklin. I don't care for him. I don't have.
Really we hate James Franklin on this podcast.
Any good reason why, but he just, I don't know. I just don't care for the guy.
I think I said I wanted to kick him in the nuts as hard as I could. Actually, I think that was a quote on podcast.
Early podcast thing. I think it was like the first 10 episodes podcast.
I think that's just a hashtag on Twitter, sort of like that's a kick James Franklin in the nuts. I'm pretty sure that's just a universal sort of theme. Drake, your mic was just delivered. So hopefully next podcast, we figure out the audio here and we all sound the same. Are there any coaches in the Big Ten that are in the middle? Like there's clearly a couple that are so respected, right? Pat Fitzgerald, KF. Then you have maybe PJ Fleck, James Franklin. Who's in the middle where it's like, it's lukewarm. Leaves a lukewarm feeling.
Yeah, Chris. You know, I think he's probably a good guy, but he's just.
I respect Chris. I put him in
there. I don't know, Allen at Indiana.
I think he's
I respect him as well. I think he runs a good program.
Yep.
At this point, Bielema's sort of in the middle because we don't know.
Yeah, He was around. He was kind of like that middle guy. He had success, when he was at Wisconsin, obviously, but you know, there's some mixed feelings from around about him, I heard.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what he does back in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it will be. Today, as we record this episode earlier today, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the ACC announced an alliance, whatever that means. I don't think there was any real anything to come out of it. If I'm wrong about that, and anybody saw anything, please correct
scheduling.
Me. Scheduling. So yeah. We're gonna get like one crossover game with each.
Yep. So from what I saw is that ideally going to go back to 8 conference games, and then each school is going to play one school from the other 2 conferences in their non-conference schedule. So I will get a game from the Pac-12 and from the ACC, 2 other non-conference games that they can schedule whatever they want, and then they'll play their 8-game conference season.
Interesting.
It's like DC and Marvel making movies together.
A little bit.
And then I said, like, they wanted to, you know, because they're like-minded and how the future of college athletics should continue, and they want to be a power balance to the growing influence of the SEC or something like that. I don't know. I just, you know, I'm all for the scheduling stuff. I think that would be cool to get some.
Yeah, I think that'll be cool.
Does this make the SEC Nazi Germany?
Oh, they are. Yes.
The SEC is the Axis. And
yeah, you know what they just did is they, with the with Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC, is they just annexed Austria. That's what happened. That's where we're at right now.
World War II.
And now they're looking at Poland thinking, I want that.
I don't know
who Poland is, but they're looking.
Warsaw. Now we know what Roll Tide really means, Donner.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, now that we've – so this makes Nick Saban Hitler.
Not Nick Saban. Whoever – just
SEC commissioner.
I don't know who that is. What it does do is it leaves the other 8 teams minus Texas and Oklahoma, because they're the assholes who started this whole thing. Kind of leaves them in this weird sort of pool of, hey, we don't really know what to do with you yet. I don't know what's going to happen with them. I suppose
there's, I mean, I don't think the 3 conferences that just created an alliance really want any of those schools that badly. There's talks of merger with the Athletic Conference or American Conference.
Throw them in with the MAC. Just put them with the MAC.
I don't know. I just know that this is bad for college football.
I agree. I don't like it.
I was going to ask your opinion, Micah. What do you think from a fan's perspective with the conferences changing, maybe playing other schools from the pack each year? What does that feel like for you?
Like Kevin said, I think that'll be cool to get to play, you know, if they get to play an ACC team and a Pac-12 every year, that'd be kind of fun to watch. But yeah, just the overall everything that's going on, I really don't like it.
Yeah, you said you don't like change.
I'm more of the traditional. Yeah, I'm more of the traditional, you know, Big Ten. Big 12, you know, I don't know.
But that's, we're the Big 14.
What I grew up with, and yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, we got.
Well, Armour, is anyone happy with the addition of Maryland?
Butgers, Maryland, Nebraska's flaky ass.
It's tough, man. I mean, like we said, I think we said like several podcasts ago, I think I'd rather have Iowa State than any 3 of those teams in the Big Ten.
Iowa State doesn't do anything for the Big Ten, though. Doesn't give them any more money. Yeah.
No, but
that's what it's all about. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's just like corporate consolidation, man. It's good for the company that does the acquisition. It's sometimes good in some ways for the consumer. Many ways, it's not.
Kev, tell me this right now. You're trying to tell me that the Seahawks series alone isn't worth more in revenue than Butgers and Maryland games combined?
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, probably not.
It's all about TV markets.
Yeah, TV
gets New York TV markets. Maryland gets DC TV markets. Baltimore.
Yeah.
You know, Iowa has plenty of fans in Des Moines. Iowa State's not drawing any viewership from outside of Iowa.
Yeah. It's tough. The money controlling everything is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool game for the people in Iowa. Not many people care about it outside of Iowa unless you went to Iowa or Iowa State. It's not like it's a huge one game revenue thing. It's not like the national playoff or anything like that.
Both teams would have to.
I was just thinking for basketball, Cy-Hawk series is big in basketball too. It's big in wrestling. So it would be a few money makers throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, it would add some value to the Big Ten, but the amount that it would be offset by the fact that you now have to divvy up your pot to more players, it doesn't.
Oh, but I was kicking two people out. We were trading.
Oh, we were trading.
We're trading Butkers away because we don't want those assholes.
Nobody wants Butkers. And that's almost disrespectful to call him that. It's almost disrespectful to Ike. I don't even like calling him Butkers. It's disrespecting our board.
With Shiano back?
Oh, God.
It's interesting.
No, because who wants to go play there, man? For real.
He had him. He was the one that brought him up to a decent program.
Yeah,
back there was that mid-2000s. He was there, right?
I think so, something like that.
Yeah, and that was back before they joined the Big Ten. But
he was the one that taught Ray Rice how to beat the shit out of his wife.
Jesus Christ!
I mean, he probably coached Ray Rice. Yeah, early mid-2000s.
Is that who Ray Rice played for?
It's the right timeline.
Let me look at stuff.
Rutgers.
Yeah. He throws a meme. That was a mean hook. I mean, gotta give it to him. That's so disrespectful.
Yeah, he went to Rutgers and was drafted in 2008.
I mean, I don't know. It's just like, who want? I actually do feel like I've seen them getting higher end recruits as of late too. Like they've actually recruited well, but it just doesn't turn into anything. Like there's no culture. Talk about culture. You got to find something there. Like they have to grab onto something. And I just don't think
Rutgers. Yeah. He was at Shiano's at Rutgers from 01 to 11. Then was in the NFL for a little bit. Then defense coordinator at Ohio State. Now back at Rutgers.
How about, speaking of the NFL, how about our boys tearing up the preseason, huh?
Looking good.
You see CJ Beathard, the golden goat out there, huh?
The golden goat, that's right.
I'm going to tell you what, man. CJ Beathard, this guy out of Iowa, Hawkeyes.
Gamer.
Led him to a Big Ten title appearance in 2015. Out there for the Jacksonville Jaguars, man. Urban Meyer. I like what I see out there, man. Tell you what.
Micah, any favorite NFL teams that you follow? Or
yeah, unfortunately, I'm a Raiders fan.
Raiders fan. Now, how do
that's
you
not unfortunate at all. That's
Southwest Iowa. You know,
I get that question all the time. When I was just a little kid, I had a friend of the family gave me a Raiders jacket. And I looked up to him. So that was pretty cool. And then Bo Jackson, right in that same era. So that
guy was all right.
Dude, it's no shame to be a Raiders fan.
And everybody else is a Chiefs fan. And I don't like being necessarily like everybody else. So,
but the fans can't control anything. So you're part of the most badass fan group. Yeah. And nobody's fan group can do shit except for cheer. So you're the most legendary fan group of them all, probably. I mean,
yeah, I'm just looking forward, now a lot easier to get to a game with them in Vegas than it was when they were in Oakland. So,
sure. So I was just about to ask you that as a Raiders fan who didn't live in Oakland, what did you think about the move to Vegas? Do you like it? Yeah, or?
Didn't really, indifferent, cool new stadium. So,
I always kind of felt bad for the Raiders fans because they were back when they moved, they were like just kind of getting good. And like the Raiders have been so bad for so long. Raiders fans are still just like electric human beings.
Yep.
And I almost felt kind of bad when they made the move.
Yeah.
I feel like it's becoming a little bit more cool now to be a Raiders fan again. I think there's a little bit of that. I don't know. Maybe not. I'm not a huge NFL guy. I'm a big Hawks in the NFL guy though. You guys see Nick face Neiman putting on for the Chargers?
That was a sweet play.
He's going to make the squad, no doubt.
Dude.
He is too athletic, and I think he's going to have a nice little Ben Neiman type career. Stick around, take some money. Hey,
we're going to find out once and for all, after all of the marbles have been rolled around the table, who is the better Neiman.
I think it might be Nick. I don't know.
Nick's more athletic, and there's really no way of
hey.
Well, when you have to,
really no way of denying,
you have to that. Carry around that head that's so.
Who's
big.
Grittier? Who's grittier? We're gonna find out who's just the grittier, nastier Neiman.
See, it's like, dude, the thing when you ask like who's the tougher, grittier, like you talk to both the dudes, and anytime you talk to them, they just got that big ass goofy smile on their face. How can you tell me like either these dudes are NFL players? But either way,
to be honest, Nick has a lot to live up to. Because Ben's got 2 Super Bowl appearances, a Super Bowl ring, and he's a 5-year vet now. Like, that's pretty – or is it 4 years? How many years?
Hold on. Week 3, the Chargers, the day after my birthday, go to the Chiefs.
Uh-oh.
Imagine this. Opening kickoff. Ben Neiman is at the L3. Nick Neiman is in the kick return team. They line up. They have each other.
Ben's killing him. Ben gets him.
Nick has to block Ben.
Hey, on the first play, Ben's been in the league. Ben's played in 2 Super Bowls. This is Nick's first time in the league. Ben wins the first.
You think he's knocking out Lil Bro in the first play?
No, but I just think he wins. Lil Bro wants it so bad.
He's so charged.
You know what's going to happen is the ball's going to be kicked 10 yards out of the end zone, but Ben's still going to run his ass over.
Yeah. That'd be fantastic. So I know I asked you to come prepared a little bit, Micah, with some questions. I don't know if you did that or not. Did you?
I did a little bit. Yeah.
What a legend you. I want to go back quick. We talked about like 85, like your earliest memory. I want to go back a little bit to in the last 20 years, call it the KF era. Are there any games that you've been to specifically where you're like, oh, I was at this game. It was a special moment, or like, I got to see this special thing happen in Kinnick Stadium. Any of those that stick out?
Yep. 2 really stick out. One was the beatdown of Ohio State.
You were there.
I was there. So that was awesome. That was completely the best game I've ever been to.
How did my catch look?
I was on the other opposite side. So I really couldn't tell.
Sure.
I did see a fall though. So.
You and 3 million other people.
Yeah.
that's a really good thing to hang your hat on. Tripped in front of 3 mil. Not a lot of people can say that. You know?
And another one that really sticks out, and it's just because of who it was against, but was actually when Drake busted his leg up bad that Nebraska game.
That's one of my favorite moments.
That was just because they were ranked, weren't they?
They were ranked like 20 that year.
Yeah, but yeah.
And we proceeded to put a fucking beat down on them.
Yeah.
Yes, that was. We had a few Nebraska fans sitting around us that didn't last to halftime. So that was.
Love that. Oh, yeah. I love when they go out.
Yeah, Drake didn't last till halftime either. So.
Hey, that's bullshit. I was down there until the last whistle blew, you bastard.
Outside
enough painkillers either.
Outside of football alone, just a pure one of my favorite life moments was Drake breaking his leg. That was a big one for me. I thought it was fantastic. Drake actually quickly came back to the sideline after they straightened it out and put it in a thing. I came off the field on one of the PATs or punts and sort of set my helmet down. And Drake's leaning up against like one of the equipment carts. And he like just kind of looks like this most nonchalant. If you're on the YouTube, you can see he's like leaning back. He looks over and he goes, "It's not good, bub. It's not good." And I looked over. I wasn't even paying attention. Like I saw you go off, obviously, but everybody kind of stays locked in. Like team can't think about Drake if we're going to beat Nebraska, right? And I kind of look over. I look over. Yeah, right. I look over and I'm like, "Man, you really fucked yourself up, huh? Like, that's bad." He goes, "Oh, it's broke." I'm like, does it hurt? And he goes, not really, not right now. It's gonna hurt bad. It's gonna hurt really bad
on TV. Yeah,
he's fine now.
Yeah, kind of.
We couldn't see it, but when we got home and watched the game, it was like, oh damn, yeah.
As you sat in the stadium for the Ohio State game, what emotions were you feeling as a fan to watch us do that to, you know, a blue blood top? What were they ranked? Top five?
I think so.
From your perspective, was it like, holy shit? Like, is this real? Is that how is it feeling?
No, I wouldn't say that was my feeling. You know, going in, I'm always like the eternal optimist. You know, it's like, we can beat these guys. You know, we could do that. And,
well, you really are a legend, because a lot of people, including myself, was like, oh my gosh, we might get.
I don't know. That's just as when I played sport, you know, I didn't care who we were playing. That's just always been my attitude, is I'm doing this to win. And I think that's probably how most athletes think. So that's still kind of how I think as a fan. But yeah, after that opening pick six, it was like, we're on a roll. And then they go down and score right away. And I was like, oh, this might be back and forth. And yeah, I was pretty positive the whole time. I didn't really have, you know, we were moving the ball, and once we, well, when Bosa, when he went out, that sure didn't hurt anything. And
I was so pumped when he got thrown out of the game. I was like,
same dude,
there, boys.
I was giggling on the sideline, like, oh, we got away with one, let's go.
Yeah, no, it was just like excitement the whole time. It's like, they're gonna do this, and it just kept getting better and better.
Did they have Chase?
Young.
Yeah, Chase Young was on the team, but he was a freshman.
He wasn't playing yet?
He was playing a little bit, but it like wasn't the most playing time.
Boy, glad we didn't have him at full speed that game. That guy's scary.
Yeah.
Did you get yourself down on the field after that game? A little storm?
We did. Yeah, we went down on the field. We didn't like rush it or anything. We went down kind of after everybody was
fantastic.
Everybody else was down there and milled around a little bit, took some pictures with the wife and brother and sister-in-law and stuff.
Love it. Enjoyed it. Well, those are two pretty, well, the beating Nebraska and getting to watch Drake experience just a little bit of pain. That's always a good time. And
yeah,
obviously the Ohio State win probably is like a top five game for anyone. That's a Hawkeye fan. So
yeah. I've seen some pretty brutal ones too, but those two, and especially in the, probably out of even any game I've ever been to, those two probably rank right up there for sure.
What's the worst game you've ever been to?
Oh God, it was Ron Dane.
Oh,
ran for like 3,000 yards. It was bad. It was like late 90s.
Yeah, we did that to a lot of people.
Still, yeah, we were right behind Wisconsin's bench, just a few rows, and we could hear them, you know, and they were just kind of like mock. It was bad. It wasn't fun.
Dane was just pounding it down our ass. Yeah.
Talk about a dude now.
He's not. Hey,
yeah.
Now, you want to go back and talk about a guy. You know, this guy was – he wanted it. He wasn't just willing. He wanted it. Yeah. 3,000 yards would have been about fucking 10% of his total yardage lifetime. So, that guy was good.
Yeah.
You're going to let the man ask his questions or what?
Yeah. Yeah. Micah, we're not going to take forever. We're going to respect your time. So okay. I'm going to cough quick, but his.
Like the questions I'd really like to ask you guys, I know you probably wouldn't want to answer them on a public forum.
We'll answer all of them.
Well, I don't know about all of them. But
yeah, exactly. That's, yeah.
Give us a try.
Okay.
Ask me what I said to Lazard on a punt return in 2015. I can't tell you that one.
This one's a teed up easy, but like, what's your guys' most memorable football moment, or just Iowa moment, not necessarily football, other than the Big Ten championship game?
I was gonna say losing the Big Ten championship.
My entire personality. Is it like
a night out with the boys after a big win, or you know?
I'm gonna agree with Drake. My entire personality from December 5th, 2015, there on after, is around losing the Big Ten championship. No, that's a good positive message.
Kevin's eternally depressed.
Dude, it'll never go away. We were 40 seconds away from being Big Ten champs. And now
playing Bama in the playoffs.
And now we're fucking nobodies. So, dude, like, That's where we're at.
Our podcast would have at least 300 more listeners if we would have went to the fucking playoff. God.
I'm going to say, I think the night out after Michigan will live in my mind for forever. And then I'm going to go with the Ohio State game. There was like one point in the fourth quarter where there's just an IOWA chant. It seemed like it was going on for 10 minutes. We're kicking the shit out of them. You know, it's, I think, our second to last game in Kinnick that year. And I'm just like taking it all in. It's like, dude, this is going to be one of the coolest moments of your entire life.
When did you guys feel them like quit? Did they quit? Could you tell when they were just,
they quit.
Yeah. That's a great feeling when you know you've just broken somebody.
I remember.
I would say like it was, you know, when we're still kicking the ball off in the fourth quarter, and you can tell when a kick return team's getting tired of kick returning, because that's a shitty thing to have to do a lot, because you're giving up a lot of points. You can just tell dudes had no interest in really blocking them anymore.
Yeah.
I would say that the drive into the Rose Bowl was one of the most memorable things in my career, because the drive from LA to Pasadena is pretty cool. And then the Hawk Walk was like at least 100,000 people, I think. Like, it's one of the biggest Hawk Walks I've ever seen. And
best Hawk Walk, though, Minnesota 2015.
Legendary one.
Yeah, and then the next week, it was desolate. It was
a couple guys' families was there.
I would say for me, a lot of the moments that a fan would be able to conjure up of like, oh, that's probably one of their favorite moments too, all of those stick out to me. But sort of the one that really sticks out to me was just walking out. The specialists are always the first one out of the locker room. So we go out what seems like 3 hours before the game to warm up, just so we're out of the way of the real football players by the time and walking out into Beaver Stadium, and it's a whiteout at night, and it was just like I always describe it as, it felt like we walked out into the Quidditch Stadium in Harry Potter. It felt like the walls were straight up, and it was nighttime, and it was just beautiful. It was nice and it was like that football fall chill. Man, it's the isolating moments like that for me, sort of like when we went the first time we went out at Iowa State, and the whole student section, everyone in the stadium, just fuck the Hawk guy. Like that, when I feel isolated, that's what gets me going. A lot of people, that makes them anxious or they want to go hide. When I feel isolated, that puts me in a corner like the 300, and I want to, that takes me to battle. And so any moment like that, for me.
I got a few honorable mentions. It's going to be the bus drive in to Iowa State and Granny giving me the bird.
Yep. Legendary one, dude. Legendary.
And after we beat Nebraska in 15 to go 12-0, and KF's like, I don't know what to say. I've never been 12-0 before. Like, you can just tell he was so fucking proud.
Yeah.
Everyone's just so happy. It's just like, yeah, those are some things that I'm going to remember forever.
Yeah, 100%.
Another one I had was just like team and locker room dynamics when you got 100 guys from all over the country. You know, how's that work? You know, or is it, do you like kind of gravitate your position groups, or, you know, what, how's that all work? And, you know, I know, you know, everybody's not going to always get along or be best buddies. I'm just curious how that all goes together.
I mean, I'd equate it kind of like, you know, first day of high school. You hang out with some of you guys in your position group, but like, you know, you kind of gravitate towards the people that you're going to get along with best and end up being friends with them. But, you know, you know everybody. You get a chance to meet everyone.
Yeah, I agree with Kevin. The specialists get their lunch money stolen and shoved in lockers. Sometimes they don't even get lockers. And at Ohio State, I was fortunate enough to somehow find a spot on the travel roster our freshman year. We showed up at Ohio State. We had 69 guys on the travel squad. I was number 69 on that list of 1 to 69. And the 69th guy that day didn't have a locker. Okay. Greg and the boys, they just threw my shit in the corner. I was as good as the fucking rats that day. Every, you want to feel left out? Get brought to the horseshoe. Go into the deep depths of the horseshoe and then walk in and have everybody find and sift through the locker room and find their spot as they pass by your corner. Being a specialist is like eternally being a freshman in high school. You're right on, Kevin. I actually think this is an interesting question because of the differences that we saw year to year. And I always come back to the one in 2015. And again, we were third years at the time. All three of us were playing meaningful roles on the team. So we didn't feel as isolated as maybe the freshmen of that year did. But the elder players of that year, Drew Ott, we just had him on a few weeks ago, Marshall Kane, Austin Blythe, everybody on that squad, they created a culture that offseason that made whatever they did, it made that 120-guy locker room on a day-to-day basis just feel closer than the year before. And because of that, we excelled on the field. It's really tough, man. I think it's an underrated part of a Division I program is having guys from literally Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, homegrown Iowa boys, maybe a guy from Cali. And then you got to bring them all together and not only teach them to play football together, but they're spending every hour of their day for 4 months, essentially, with other football guys. They got to like, you got to find a way to get these guys to enjoy each other's presence and want to grind for each other. And sometimes you have that, sometimes you don't. And oftentimes it shows up on the field. So that's a really good question.
And that kind of leads me into my next one you're talking about there. What do you think, what leads to the most successful teams? Is it just not, is it purely talent? Is it buy-in with the system, togetherness of the team? You know, how would you rank that?
Clean football.
I would say talent is both your floor and your ceiling. And you can go anywhere in between your floor and your ceiling with your talent. You know, you can only be as good as your talent allows you to be. You're only going to be as bad as your talent is. Everything in between is coaching, preparation, strength and conditioning, culture, work ethic. And then, like Kluwer said, you know, group cohesion, team cohesion, guys getting along together and wanting to work together. Of the things that are most important after you have like your range set by your talent level, I'd argue culture is the most important because culture is going to drive everything else.
What about clean football? I feel like if the team that doesn't commit the penalties is like the team that's the most cohesive, the team that has the best culture, you know, like sloppy teams commit a lot of penalties that you look at their programs and you're just like, yeah, I mean, that's not a program from the inside. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but
kind of program you have.
I'd say, you know, things like turnovers, penalties and all that stuff, what's that come down to? It comes down to discipline. Discipline is another factor from culture.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you're both right. You're both saying the same thing. Drake, you're more on a micro level. Kevin, you're getting at the macro. A team with good culture is going to, in effect, take care of the ball, tackle like they're supposed to, not get dumb penalties, right? And so it's almost like the biggest thing as a coaching staff in the offseason is getting your players and your team to figure out that, hey, picking up the trash in the locker room is going to translate to an offsides penalty somewhere. It's going to. It's A to L in the alphabet. It's not just A to B. And figuring out all the letters in between A and L and getting that into the 18 to 20-year-old, 22-year-old mind is really the challenge. I don't remember who said this, but it's a race to maturity.
One KF lines.
Yeah, it's just a race to maturity. Who can become the most disciplined, mature team? And It's tough. It's so tough. You can't.
I mean, yeah, it's easy to say back now, looking back as a 26-year-old guy who's, you know, in, you know, we're all making our own way in the world. But as an 18-year-old kid, 18 to even 20, I'd say, you know, it doesn't really start clicking, I'd say, until you're sophomore, junior season, maybe.
We were so stupid, dude.
A lot of distractions. Yeah. Trying to slam chicks down at Scummit. Hard to think about, you know, 23B when Sally's down at Scummit and she's wearing a tank top that doesn't cover up a lot, you know? There's Fortnite, hours and hours of Fortnite that you could play. I mean, god damn. Shit, we spent a ton of time at Poncheros. I mean, we could get lost in all the, you find Ike in any restaurant in Iowa City. Like you gotta get these kids. That's what it is. It really is a race to maturity. You got kids, man.
You know, I saw like a stat one day. It's like the average American eats a football field worth of pizza during their lifetime.
Jesus Christ.
I would love to see how big the burrito is. Of all the burritos we ate during college.
Is that a snack or a meal? It's a few meals. Yeah. So I hope that answers your question, Mike. I kind of roundabout.
Yeah, no, way. And that's kind of what I suspected. But yeah, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
Last question I had was, has doing the podcast caused any issues with former teammates or upset anybody because you've kind of talked about some of the stuff on the inside? Or
awesome question. You know,
teammates, yeah, we've had a few unhappy teammates with, I mean, it was almost, I mean, yeah. Lou, if you want to.
I guess I'm probably most.
And I don't expect you guys to name names or anything, but just.
Well, I mean, the teammates named them fucking selves. It was during last summer. And,
yeah. Oh,
and I mean, didn't even mean, you know, even not even that, just the podcast in general and talking about what goes on inside the walls. And
yeah, no, because we don't really snitch on anybody, you know.
Right.
We tell fun stories and we tell what it's like to be a player, and we honestly we're really pretty complimentary of everything that goes on behind those scenes. And we try and we've actually been accused of being homers many times. It's kind of like, all right, well, I mean, lick my balls. Yeah, I'm a homer. I played for the squad for 5 years.
Right.
everybody else can eat it.
I think it's a really good question, Micah, because to some extent, I think Kevin probably would echo this. I don't know about Drake because he always has been so great at speaking his mind, but I think in Kevin's perspective, it's hard to open up sometimes and really go in depth on stuff. And Kevin's very much so, and he could probably talk about this more. He's gotten a lot better at it. But in the beginning, it was like elaborate, Kevin, come on, like say some words here, you know. And I have no problem speaking my mind, but as a specialist we joke about it, but you do feel sort of apart from the team in a way. I almost felt like it was like, okay, I was very self-conscious. I don't know if I've ever told anybody this, but I was very self-conscious through the first 6 months, maybe a year of doing this thing, when it actually gained popularity, because it felt like the long snapper shouldn't be the one to do this, right? Even though I went through every single thing that these two did and everybody else and Josie Jewell and George Kittle, I went through every single thing other than maybe some meeting hours.
Blocks and nine on.
Blocks and nine on.
and the specifics of practice, right? But
you were there.
But I was there. And so it took a while for me. It was a large case of imposter syndrome, because one, we didn't know how to make a podcast anyway. We've been winging this motherfucker since day one. But even then, it's like I could hear what my teammates, my former teammates, some specifically would say when I imagined them learning about me doing a podcast on Iowa football. I could hear Coach Doyle and some of the older guys from when we were young in 2013 saying, oh, of course Kluver's got a fucking podcast. Kid can't shut his mouth. Like I could hear that. And, you know, I like you said earlier, you don't get along with everybody. And even though I didn't get along with everyone and I rubbed some people the wrong way, I want all of our former teammates to respect what we do on here. And because, like Drake said, we are in the end, I think, very, very big advocates for the program and for our teammates and for most of the guys we played with, 99% of them. So, you know, I guess the way this kind of exercises itself is we've asked a few people to come on and they have straight up said, you know, it's not my thing. Like, I don't really want to come on. We've gotten completely ghosted. I think I've hit up AJ Epinesa's in like DMs like 10 times and I get left on red every single time. And it's like, okay, I don't know what I did to Ep, but, or maybe he's just not into podcasts, but he doesn't fuck with us like that. And so he ain't coming on the podcast. So it is what it is. I don't know. I don't think we've rubbed anybody the wrong way to like where we've ruined a relationship. Right. Like, you know,
no. We haven't, you know, I still have a relationship with a lot of the coaches and talk to them, and they obviously know that we do it and listen every now and then. We haven't like broken any bridges or anything like that. One thing that I kind of struggle with sometimes is, you know, I hold that program that KF has put together in such high regard, and everything that program did for me has basically gotten me to where I am today, is that I wonder sometimes if us doing this podcast is good, if it adds to it and, you know, gives fans an insight as to what it's like being a Hawkeye, what we as a program believe in and our values, if that is helpful for the fan base, for the university, for the Iowa football program, or if, you know, us shining a light into it that we are just normal human beings, you know, we aren't these perfect human beings that people probably have images of in their mind, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know.
Oh, I like this. Kevin's struggling with words. I like this.
So I don't know if this is true or not, but sometimes you get the impression that fans hold players up on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Because you only get to see them in press conferences. You get to see them, you know, in their social media posts, you know, I love Iowa football, working hard, yada, yada, yada. You don't almost see them as normal human beings. And we do this podcast and we say some stuff that rubs people the wrong way. We use very poor language, you know, it's like,
which by the way, we texted before this episode because of some of the changes the podcast is going through, and we didn't come through on any of those promises.
No, we didn't. Absolutely not. But sometimes I wonder, is like, does us doing this podcast look poorly on the program sometimes? And it probably does in some people's eyes.
Yeah.
That's something I sometimes question myself. It's because
I think it's really cool, guys, what you're doing. You know, as a fan and as an older fan too, you know, I guess I'm not old, but older than you guys. I think it's really cool to get that inside perspective. You know, what you guys have gone through. I think, you know, that mental health episode was, if I don't care what anybody does for a living or where they're at in their life, they can relate to that. And I thought that was a really, really cool episode. And then just getting the inside stories from some of the players you guys have had on throughout the time. I think it's great. I hope you guys keep going. I enjoy it. I know.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm still here. You know, I love reconnecting with guys that we don't get a chance to talk to all that often, or bringing on some guy from a different era, hearing their stories and stuff. I do enjoy it. I get to talk to these two Yahoos a couple times a week. It's makes, but yeah, we're gonna still do it. I, as for, it's, you know, It's for the people that want to listen to it.
Yeah. And I think it kind of speaks for the program, and even through the years, you know, my limited experience with players and ex-players and whatnot, they've all been good guys. You know, when I was a little kid, we got to hang around. We had a friend that played. His son was a special team. I think he got a scholarship or whatnot. And he played in the early 90s. He played with Brett. And we had a weekend where they came back and played softball here and in Atlantic. And my dad pitched for him. And I was around. It was like Matt Rogers and Jim Hartlieb and Brett Lima and Alan Cross, Paul Burmeister. I was like 12, but I remember all of them. You know, they were just awesome to me. They were awesome to everybody there that was, you know, lots of Hawkeye fans that watched them. And it was just, you know, it just kind of spoke for the program, you know, what kind of kids they have on the team. And yeah, I just, it's, and you can see just the way Kirk carries himself and talks about his players. I wouldn't want anybody else coaching Iowa right now. I know that. So
I think that's one thing to hang your hat on as a fan, anyone listening, is with this current Iowa staff, you can guarantee that guys who make it through the program, again, not to a 100% rate, but damn near everyone, probably better than most programs, those guys are going to end up being good Hawkeyes and good players on the field, but they're also going to turn out as good guys. And that's,
yeah. And as I get older, that's, you know, that's more important on sometimes. And, you know, I definitely want to see him win, but doing it right is important to me too, as a fan. So,
well, you're a great fan, not only a Hawkeye fan, but a washed up walk-ons fan, part of the walk-on army. One of the OGs, really. I mean, you go way back into last year. So we appreciate you taking time out of your schedule, Micah, and joining us on this second ever walk-on army feature. I hope the fans enjoy this one. We're previewing Indiana in two podcasts.
Yeah, can't wait.
Two podcasts. So, you know, grease the gears up, baby, because this season's full force, and we're not going to quite announce. I'm going to announce the big news on the next episode, because technically, legally, I don't know if we're allowed to yet. So, but thank you again, Micah. Episode 243.
Thanks for having me.
Wash up walk-ons. Talk to you again on Monday.